Ladies and gentlemen, this is a special edition of the Driveway Liberty Podcast, where we record Representative Michelle Salzman's speech at the Walton Republican Women's Federated Meeting in South Walton, Florida.
Hey guys, Uncle Wes here. Remember how we're always talking about how we wish we had access to an alternative marketplace for conservatives and get away from this woke culture? Well, guess what? We found one. MammothNation.com. You can buy jewelry, eyewear, stuff for your pets, sauces, spices, coffees, vodka, wine. Just about anything you want, you can get at MammothNation.com. And guess what? If you use promo code Driveway Liberty Media when you sign up, you can get 30% off your first year. Go check them out. MammothNation.com, promo code Driveway Liberty Media.
Who can remember 1995? That's when America Online brought us the World Wide Web. Also in 95, Republicans gained control of both chambers in D.C. for the first time in 40 years. And they almost passed a constitutional amendment requiring a balanced budget. It was voted down by one single vote in the U.S. Senate. That same year, a 17-year-old teenage girl named Michelle enlisted in the U.S. Army, seeking a better future for her life. She was one of the first six U.S. Army soldiers deployed through NATO to Bosnia. Her first month was in a combat zone surrounded by snipers and landmines. Yet she stood guard with an M16 at the perimeter of concertina wires. Michelle's ancestors have lived in the Panhandle since the 1800s. She returned to the Panhandle where she was raised and earned her business degree from the University of West Florida. After serving her country, she continued her impressive commitment by serving on over a dozen local, county, and state nonprofit boards of directors, such as Monument to Women Veterans, Gulf Coast Crime Stoppers, Junior Achievement, Escambia County Public Schools Foundation, Take Stock in Children, Pensacola Mess Hall Foundation, Rally Pensacola, Studer Community Institute, Achieve Escambia, and as Vice President of the Pensacola Chapter of the Florida Public Relations Association. And many of us know serving on nonprofit boards requires an extra measure of heartfelt commitment. She has also served as the Escambia County PTA President and on the Florida PTA Board of Directors, and as the Education Chair of the Pensacola Mayor's Transition Team. Her volunteer service also extends to over a dozen additional organizations. I'm not going to list them all anymore, such as Mentor for Veterans Entrepreneurs, Powerful Women of the Gulf Coast, Impact 100, and Florida Carry. In addition to all the Army medals Michelle Salzman earned serving her country, she's received numerous volunteer awards. Three times, she's been named Volunteer of the Year. In 2020, while we were walking one way in single file down the grocery aisles, Michelle Salzman successfully campaigned during the pandemic and was elected to the Florida House of Representatives. She was re-elected in 2022. 2 years in a row, she was named Pensacola's Politician of the Year. Michelle enjoys spending time with her family, including three precious children and her husband, Phil, whom honors us by joining us today. While productive service really is Michelle Salzman's recreational passion, she can also often be found on the shooting range. That 17-year-old girl who fiercely began her life of service as a teenager is now serving in the free state of Florida as a lawmaker who annually balances the Florida state budget. Oh, and that single final vote that blocked the U.S. balanced budget constitutional amendment back in 1995 was a Republican. Knowing who we elect matters, and Michelle Salzman makes herself available. She has earned a reputation as a fierce force to be reckoned with. She is a roll-up-her-sleeves, get-the-job-done kind of public servant. You know, a woman. So please join me with a warm Walton welcome for Florida's firecracker representative, the Honorable Michelle Salzman.
My husband said, "Did you write that?" I said, "No, I'd never heard it before." He said, "Concertina wire, that sounds familiar." I'm going to tell y'all a little story and then I'll get to this. Back when Hurricane Ivan hit, y'all remember Hurricane Ivan, right? So I would, you know, once a soldier, always a soldier, once a mama, always a mama, and we'll get into the mama thing in a moment. But we had all of our fences fell down in all the neighborhoods, as you know, and we live close, as most people do, to a bad neighborhood. And that 10-foot privacy fence that surrounded our perimeter was literally keeping out the bad guys. And we didn't really recognize that we were doing that. We just live in a safe place. So when the hurricane hit, And the fence falls, people started trying to break into our homes. We had nice houses. So they're like, they have a nice house. They must have water. So, of course, I'm like, okay. I had a couple of elderly neighbors that said that they attempted to break in, and they actually defended their homes by answering the door with a firearm. And I thought, wow, eventually somebody's going to get shot. Or maybe we can build our own perimeter. So I just, somehow or another, I went to the Army National Guard post in Pensacola, and I pulled up and I convinced those guys to give me some rolls of concertina wire. And I went back to my house, and most of these men, and I love my men. They're great. They're strong. But most of them never been in the service. They didn't know what in God's name concertina wire was. They didn't know what they were getting into. And that stuff is a mess. It's razor wire, the round razor wire that you see around the prisons. So anyway, we're out there putting out, you got to bounce it to get it. So we're bouncing out concertina wire. I did three rows. Anybody serving combat? Three rows, right? You need the three rows. That's how you build your perimeter when you first deploy. So we had the three rows out. It wasn't about 4 or 5 days later, code enforcement. Ma'am, is this your concertina wire? I said, yes, sir. Well, it's illegal to have concertina wire. And I said, well, this is what we're going to do. You're going to act like you didn't see this concertina wire because my fence guy is coming in a couple of days. And it's either take down the concertina wire and answer a different phone call, or you can leave that up. And he said, you know what, man, I'll come back in a week. So we did it. We kept it up. So once a soldier, always a soldier. But Phil was like, Phil, my husband, will you wave? He probably don't want to stand. He's very shy. He actually is less shy. I'm very shy. I know that this sounds so ridiculous, but with a microphone, I'm by myself. You can't, you know, but whenever I'm in a crowd, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I should talk to people. So he is not the shy one, but he doesn't like to be called out. So I'm going to call him out every 5 minutes. No, I'm kidding. First of all, Mary's amazing. Isn't she amazing? I love her. I do. I actually love her a lot. So thank you for having me. I have some thank you gifts behind me. I'll give to you later. So I have a lot of notes, and if I don't follow the notes a little bit, then I'll go off on a tangent, as you can tell, and we'll be laughing all day, and you'll be like, I didn't learn a thing about her, but she was funny. Or at least I think I'm funny. That's what my Twitter says. I think I'm funny, but you probably don't, because, you know, there's a lot of whiners on Twitter. So I'm a conservative Christian woman. I was the very first woman elected in House District 1. So there has never been a woman in my seat before. And there's never been a woman in Congressional District 1. But stay tuned. Maybe something else will happen. So first, I want to start out with my why, so you can understand. As I go through this, you're going to be like, gosh, she's so driven on this. So it doesn't make any sense. But if you've lived a life like I have, then you'll be like, oh, that makes sense. I see why. Then you won't ever question my tenacity. And it was very fun being introduced by the National CPAC president as the Florida's firecracker, by the way. I was like, dang, hey, how does he know me? So I come from a poor family. We had a lot of struggle in my youth. My mom was addicted to drugs, and my dad was an alcoholic, all these things. It was sad, but my mom loved me unconditionally. She always showed me love. She made sure that I knew she loved me, and she did all that she could to be there. So experiencing, though, that rough life, that's why I joined the Army. I knew where I was headed at 17. If I didn't join the Army, I was going to be getting into something bad. And I loved my country. I remember I did a news interview with the media in 95. I joined in 95 and I deployed in 95, by the way. Thanks, Bill Clinton. So I was doing an article with the media and I told them, I said, I am a patriot if you ever saw one. I love my country. And it's so interesting that at 17, that was the most important thing, that message that I wanted America to hear. And here I am at 45. Yes, I just told you how old I am. With the same message, you know, God bless America. I love America. And when I'm in the Florida legislature, Representative Abbott over here will tell you, the first question I ask you when you try to pass a bill or you ask me to vote for it or co-sponsor it, I say, but is it American? And it sounds so silly, is it American? But it means something. Are we focused on the American dream? Are we focused on the American values? Are we actually focused on America? And if we ask ourselves that question and we can say yes, then that's a good bill, right? That's a good bill. We stand for the Constitution. We stand for freedom. We stand for liberty. I like that. So I fought a lot. I fought a lot in life trying to just make it through. When I got to high school, I got out of high school. I joined the Army. I got a purpose. I was like, this is awesome. I love this. I got injured downrange, spent over a year in physical therapy trying to get past that. When it turned out it was just going to be a permanent profile, which that's a whole nother conversation, or a medically discharged. So I took an honorable medical discharge. And then I came back to Pensacola. I have a couple of children. And so here comes to what started my volunteer work. My oldest, I call him my first love. If you have more than one child, you know what I mean. My very first, you don't know love until you've held that baby. So my first love was 5 years old. He was in kindergarten and I started getting phone calls from the kindergarten teacher saying, ma'am, your child is a mess. Ma'am, your child won't sit still. He this and that. I'm like, my baby is the best baby in the whole wide world. You're bad. I'm good. My baby's good. You're wrong. She said, well, would you mind just spending a day here with us? You know, maybe you just come and be a parent in the room, a room parent for the day. And I said, well, absolutely. Sign me up. When do you want me to be there? I'll be happy to. I showed up, Lord Jesus, my baby. Whew. I think to this day, if I saw her, I'd be apologizing. It was bad. I said, wow, you were right. He was ADHD, like severely ADHD. And we went through some therapies and things like that. I'm not really one for medication. So we did a little bit of medication, but it wasn't much. Most of it was just learning new behaviors, changing diet, things like that. But the moral of the story is I recognized that poor lady had a mess on her hands. So I became the room parent, but it wasn't necessarily because of my baby, which we took care of. It was because when I was in that room and I was taking care of my baby, there were so many other children in there that were struggling and their mamas couldn't be there. And it reminded me when I was little, when I was in kindergarten, first grade, all the way through elementary school, my mama wasn't there for me. And I remember that feeling, that empty feeling that I had in school where nobody wanted to help me. The teachers didn't want to help me. You know, my mom wasn't there. And it was just such a lonely feeling. And I thought, I can just save one more child. I can just be there for one more. So I started going to that school every day. Thank God my husband supported me because it was full time. It was 40 hours a week. I was in that elementary school constantly trying to help other kids. So what started out as a room parent position became, I don't remember if it was carnival chair or whatever, to secretary, to president. Actually, I've never been secretary of a PTA. It's everything but secretary. That's a hard job. Secretary is the hardest job. I don't care what anybody tells you because you have to show up to everything. If you're a treasurer, you can skip out and be like, here's the budget, you know, a secretary has to keep minutes and then Lord forbid they miss a word and somebody tells you, okay, I won't be mean, but it's true. It's a hard job. So that started my journey in volunteering and, you know, it turned into county PTA, turned into other boards that had to do with education because I had a great mentor in Malcolm Thomas, which is the previous superintendent of Escambia County School District. So that's what started my journey. My why comes from, you know, I was in a bad place as a kid And I had the opportunity to do better for mine, which I still do. I was on the phone, had to leave earlier because my son called. Yes, my first love, 25, still calls me, Mom, what am I going to do? Yes, baby, this is what you do. And I really hope that I never have a day that he doesn't call me, by the way. So I love that. And my husband's like, can I just not have kids anymore? I'm like, no, baby, they're always there. So that's really the story of the why. But fast forward, while I decided to run for office, was just a few years ago. I'd never been in politics, guys. I'm just an active mom in the community, kind of like you guys. You're well-versed in what's going on in politics and the things around you, and you see that you need to be a part of the change. So you show up to things like this, and you say, I'm going to be informed, and I'm going to help make the world a better place. So I'm knocking doors, and a lot of my constituents are very similar to you guys, and they say, well, Michelle, what are you going to do to fix education? What are you going to do? How are you going to fix that? How are you going to fix this? And I'm like, wow, gosh, I can't fix that. I can't fix education. That starts with the family. What I can do is government related, but our problem starts right here. Our problem starts with your relationship with God. Our problem starts with your relationship with your neighbor, with your mom, your children. We have lost our way as humanity. And the government has no business trying to regulate us back. Thank you. So when I became elected, I decided to pull all of our resources together so I could try to make a meaningful difference. I'm one that likes to, I say I'm in the plus one business. I like to make friends. I don't like to delete them. We all have those people we don't get along with. We've been on contentious boards. We've been in places we don't all want to be around certain people, but we have a common goal and we have to figure out a way to work around that. I'm the one people call when nobody wants to talk to each other. So speaking of, one of the biggest things, like I said, the crisis in America is not government, although government is a big problem. That's not the problem. The problem is we the people. And it starts with mental health. We have a mental health crisis all over the world, but in America. So when I started calling hospital CEOs a few years ago when I got elected, I said, hey, what's going on with this mental health crisis? Like, how many beds do you have? What are you doing with Baptist? What are you doing? And they would say, well, we don't talk to each other. We don't share that information. That's proprietary. If I told them, that's my competition. I can't. And I said, and by the way, by this time, I was on the healthcare appropriations committee, and I had the ear of a lot of healthcare leaders in the state. So it was kind of hard for them to say no. I said, you know, I'm on the healthcare appropriations committee, and we're talking a lot about hospital funding. I think we should all get together and talk about mental health. So the CEOs felt very strong-armed. We have three, Sacred, Baptist, and West Florida Healthcare, HCA. And so they said, fine, we'll get together and we'll talk about mental health and what we could do. But it wasn't but a few days after that first agreement that they started calling, texting, emailing, hey, we need to invite such and such. We need to invite such and such. Have you thought about a judge? Have you thought about probation? Have you thought about the prison, the sheriff, the mayor? So what started out as three CEOs were finally going to talk to one another. It turned into 130 or 40 members of a task force that meets every 3 months. So I go to the... Sure, I understand. See, even Siri doesn't know how I did that. So then I go to the governor and I say, Governor, I need help with this. Like, the first lady's great with mental health initiatives. I don't know if y'all paid attention, but God bless Casey DeSantis. I said, I need your help with this. Casey's got all these initiatives and I'm trying to get it going in Pensacola, Florida. So they said, we'll help you out. No problem. So they start sending the secretaries of all of the agencies to Pensacola to these meetings. You've got the ACA secretary, Medicaid secretary, Department of Health. Everybody's coming and they're listening. They're like, okay, what's Pensacola, Florida going to do about mental health crisis? You know, but the truth of the matter is the number one thing we didn't have was collaboration. And we still don't have collaboration in most communities. So when we're talking about the mental health task force and why I said we need to fund the mental health task force, we need to be working on that. What in the world does that have to do with all of the priorities we should be having in Florida outside of obviously mental health is the underlying condition? Drugs. Drugs. We have a fentanyl crisis. Faith. We have a faith crisis. Human trafficking. Social media. Illegal gambling. All of these things are because people aren't right with God and they're not right with themselves. So here we are. Let's talk about the drugs for a minute. With Biden's open borders, which, let's face it, those borders are a big part of most of our problems. So I want to just throw this out here to you. So I want this to resonate. Children 14 and under are the fastest growing age group dying from fentanyl poisoning. Children 14 and under are the fastest growing age group dying from fentanyl poisoning. It literally breaks my heart. So I co-sponsored the strongest legislation as a state to combat illegal immigration. It funded flights out, said, you know what? We will pay for your trip. Yes, we used your taxpayer dollars. I will stand up to that all day long. Get them out. Get those illegal immigrants out of Florida using all of our stuff. The second thing it does is it imposes fines and criminal penalties. You know, it's one thing to create a law, which we'll talk about human trafficking in a moment, some monumental things I did there. It's one thing to say, well, we're going to make it illegal, but it's another thing to say, and then we're going to take money out of your pocket every single time you do this. So that has really, the teeth and some of those components of that legislation have been very successful. So not only did I, we'll go back to this, where are we at? So I carried funding bills to ramp up awareness and education for the drug crisis that we have. Hopefully most of the representatives in Florida carried something to have to do with fighting the fentanyl crisis. But not only did I ensure that we carried those bills, but I also ensured that we had funding for Narcan in every first responder vehicle. I worked with the local nonprofits and made sure that they had Narcan distribute free of charge. So this mental health task force, where everybody's standing around, one of the meetings I'll never forget, it was, I think, the second time we met. It's only been going for about a year and a half. Somebody stood up and said, it was our director. It was the guy that runs the ambulances. He said, I don't have enough Narcan. I'm out of Narcan. I go through all my Narcan in the first few hours of a shift. I don't have any more. And then somebody else in the room stands up and says, well, gosh, I have a whole bunch of Narcan at my facility. We don't even know what to do with it. We don't give it out. Would you like it? And then another person stands up and said, we need Narcan at our facility so that we can give it away for free. So when you have a group of people together in a room with the same idea, even though we don't all agree on how to get there, we all agree that we need to get there. We did it. We found a way. Now we have it, and most in the panhandle is good to go, but we have made it to where we are not going to run out of Narcan on a 12-hour shift as we answer calls for people, you know, overdosed. So that was a big win for the Mental Health Task Force. That was a big win to fight the fentanyl crisis in Pensacola, Florida. And then, of course, if you go to any nonprofit facility that has anything to do with mental health care, they can give you Narcan for free, no questions asked. Now, we've done other things this past year to provide it in a bigger way, but this was a little over a year ago. So leading the charge, and we'll talk about that later. The next thing is faith. And I want to just share with you that the most important thing to me was trying to invite these pastors to the table, trying to make them kind of like the CEOs, make them talk to each other. Pastors are the same way. Do we have any pastors in the room? Thank goodness, because I know y'all be getting me. But it's true. They're very territorial. I have a pastor, and if I'm with another pastor at an event, they're like, what are you doing with him? I'm like, I'm just saying hi. I'm just hugging his neck. I love you. You're my guy. But it's true. So we bring them to us, and then we also come to them. Every single mental health task force meeting that we have hosted has been in a church. And that is not on accident. The first lady and the governor did some really cool stuff. They granted permission. They gave a permission slip to the Department of Children and Families, which allows faith-based organizations to partner with foster children and their families. Not just says, well, you can go do it if you find them. It says, call us and we'll tell you where a kid is. So if you're a church or a religious facility and you want to help some children or families of that child, or even the mom that lost the child, you want to help her get her child back because she just needs support services, you can call your local DCF affiliate and say, hey, I'm ready for some names. We have granted that permission in the state of Florida so you can do that. Our mental health task force was where it launched. We launched it in the panhandle, but obviously because it's God's country up here, so it just made sense. But It's been very successful. We've hosted several Fostering with Faith initiatives where we have brought the foster families with the faith-based community, several different actual public events. Braden was at one last week, I believe, we hosted as well. So just bringing that faith-based community into the conversation and then also going to them. I think that's a really critical part of fixing America. You know, not necessarily the government's job, but the government has a responsibility. You know, having this title as state representative gives me access to a lot of doors that most people will never know. And why would I sit on that? How can anybody sit on the ability to help somebody? It blows my mind. So I use my title and we make big progress. But that goes back to being the mama, right? We all know what it's like to be a mom and to love on our kids. And I look at it as that. So now we're going to talk about, I think I skipped a page, 3. I must have dropped one. Oh, that's good for y'all because that slows it down. What's 4? 4 is, goodness, I thought I was organized. It was human trafficking. I'm missing my human trafficking page, but that's okay because I know my legislation. So, which is a good thing. So human trafficking is a huge part of the mental health crisis. How is that? Well, one, usually girls that are trafficked are insecure. They're in the wrong place at the wrong time, or their friends have convinced them to try this drug. It's great. Oh, you need another one? Here's more drugs. Oh, you want more? You got to come with me. That's how it works. Women, young children, and women and men, I won't be ugly, men too, but they're vulnerable. And these predators seek vulnerable people. So trafficking is definitely directly related to mental health crisis in America. So last year, I have a good friend named Blaise Ngolia. I know y'all probably don't know who he is, but that man is a force in the Senate, a great friend. He's in South Florida. And he calls me one day. He said, Salzy, they call me Salzy in the legislature. Salzy, did you see what happened with that child group home? And did it? I said, no, Blaise, I didn't. He said, I want to fix it. I want to do something about it. And I said, whoa, slow down, Blaise. And I said, why are you calling me? He said, because you've been on human trafficking task force for like 4 years now. Before people knew it was really happening in the panhandle and the sheriffs actually said it was real, I was a part of some of these task force. So I've been working in this world for quite some time. So I said, okay, Blaise, well, this is what I know. If you want to pass human trafficking legislation and really do something meaningful, you need to call the AG. Ashley Moody is where it's at. Like, if you're going to need funding for whatever it is, and you're not going to get it if she doesn't like it. And you need to know what really is important. Like, we see what we see, but she sees a whole nother perspective, and we need to make sure we're on the right track. So then we sit down and we meet with Ashley, and we come up with this really big, extensive bill. It was huge. It had a whole bunch of stuff in it. And then the AG says, listen, Rep, your staff isn't going to like the bill, and leadership is going to need to put a couple million in here. It's okay if we take some of this stuff out. And I was like, so in other words, I can water the bill down and it'll mean nothing, but it'll be a great signal and Blaise will be happy. No, I don't do that. I don't check boxes. That's what's wrong with America. Everybody wants to check a box, say they did it, and move on. I don't want to do that. Thank you. I don't want to do that. We're going to make something meaningful happen or we're not going to run the bill. Like it's, and she was trying to help me. I love Ashley. That girl is, yes, one of my favorite politicians I've ever met in my life. But she was trying to help me get a win. But a win to me is a fight. We got to get something meaningful done. So I'm going to tell you, we passed some of the most monumental human trafficking legislation last year because we just made the right partners. We made the right partners and we educated. So we put a lot of things in place for that. One of which was, did you know that you can call one of those crisis centers and say, hey, do you have a safe house? And they say, oh yeah, it's over here. You know, I'll send you the coordinates, you know. So the safe house is secret most of the time. But did you know there are no guardrails in place for that safe house? There's no requirement of anything at all in there. No security, no signage to show the symptoms of human trafficking, no training on how to provide mental health services. But you know, the number one problem we have with trafficked victims that we bring back in, they get re-trafficked. Re-trafficking is one of the number one problems of human trafficking. And how do you combat re-trafficking if you don't have any trained facilities, any trained people? Anybody can get a 501c3 and say that they're a safe house, start collecting money off of the community, off the government, and then start bringing these families, kids, moms, whatever in, and then not actually provide the safety guardrails required. So now these people have put their trust in you to help them, and then they get re-trafficked. You'll never see them again. So providing these guardrails is really critical. Did you know there aren't any in the entire United States for youth group homes? None. Well, there are now because we did it. We worked with DCF. We worked with the governor's office. We worked with the AG. And we worked with some national human trafficking organizations. And we created some guardrails. Now, the way we did it was an instant. It'll start, I believe, next year. Because we did. The AG was right. We got a lot of pushback. But it was meaningful legislation. Another thing that bill did, and then I'll move on, it's very important. You know, we required a couple of years ago for hotel employees to just do a little training, online training. It didn't cost the hoteliers any money at all. And it was like 30 minutes online. They didn't even have to do anything for the reporting. It does it for you. You go online, you do the little training, and you submit your information, and then the report is generated. No harm, no foul. The first year that we did that a few years ago, we had about a 60 to 70% participation rate. The second year, it was like 30 or 40. And then the third year is whenever I decided to add something to my legislation. There was no teeth in it. It was just a, hey, you should do this. And if you don't, So we said, you know what? We're going to fine you thousands of dollars per day, per employee, if you can't do a 30-minute training with your people. We put that in the legislation. The only pushback I got, and I'm not trying to poke fun or be political, was Disney. So they were like, you know, this stuff you're doing, the signs and our guests really don't like human trafficking. And I was like, yeah. You can go talk to somebody else. So we were good. They were good. But that's what we did with human trafficking. It definitely circles back to the mental health of the community. And the next thing I want to talk about is social media. So social media, platforms like Facebook and Instagram use manipulative features to keep minors hooked. They use algorithms and other things that are designed to maximize the time on the apps. And that is eating away our kids. That is literally taking away their souls inside those little machines. It's the saddest thing you've ever seen. They deceptively downplay the negative impacts. They have intentionally harmed our children, our adults, our entire society. Because the longer you're on there and the more you click, the more money they make. And they're a business. They're about business. But I'm a mama. And I'm about my babies, so we're fighting back. The AG filed a lawsuit a couple days ago against Meta, and we are filing some very, very strong legislation this year that is going to do a couple of things. I'll tell you what somebody else's is going to do in a roundabout way, and then I'll tell you what we're working on in my office. We are going to create, as a state, the ability for people to sue Meta. I don't know what that's going to look like right now because that's not my legislation. I just happen to know some pretty big lawyers, and the speaker and I were talking about what I'm doing. And he said, well, let me tell you what we're doing so that we can make sure we're doing this together. And of course, he supports what the ideas. And by the way, these ideas that I'm about to share with you came from Blaze. If y'all don't know Blaze and Golio, y'all need to follow that man. He is on it. I love it. He's a man with a mission. He's bald and like 6 foot something and super buff and whatnot. He looks so mean, but he's the biggest softie you'll ever meet. Such a softie. So what we're doing here is, let's see, we are doing something about harmful communication of minors. We're going to try to put guardrails around that. We're going to require a filter on the device at the time of sale. So if we know that you're selling it to a minor or that you're going to give it to a minor, which we're going to have to ask if it's for a minor, it's required to have a filter installed on the phone so that they can't initially, you know, have access to all those things. It also will require parental consent for social media. So if you want to download that app, which, you know, these kids are downloading these apps without parents even knowing what's going on, it's going to require parental consent for that. And then we're also working on time blocks. when they can use the apps, like putting it on a curfew of like after 10 or whatever. So that bill has not been completely created yet. Those are the four key components. We're working with the AG's office, with the speaker and the president and all, you know, all the big guys, trying to figure out how we can model this in a way that would do two things. One, it would work, but two, that we could enforce it. Remember, I don't like check boxes. I want to actually make an impact. So that stuff, that's what we're looking at for social media to try to help out with that. And then I want to summarize real quick what I did, some other actionable, really cool things we did with the mental health task force. We added beds to the panhandle. There are more beds for Baker Act and other people that need inpatient care. We added providers to the panhandle. We did awareness campaigns. We created a co-responder model. That's where a social worker and a police officer show up whenever there's a domestic issue. So the police, I love my first responders, but we keep putting so much on them. It's like teachers, you know, oh, you need to teach this, you need to teach that. When we removed teaching about periods in classrooms, I got blown up by all my teacher friends. What are you doing? You're taking that away. You're making it. And I'm like, we are giving you permission to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic, and you're mad at me because we're taking away something. Like, you should be thanking me that it's not your requirement anymore, but they freak out about that kind of thing. It's kind of weird. So the co-responder model provides both of those people. So they come to your home, and if it's a social issue, the police officer doesn't need to be trained five ways to Sunday on how to respond to a schizophrenic or whatever. They've got the person there, the licensed social worker that understands and has that training. So that's a huge win. It's only in a few counties in Florida, and obviously we're happy to have it in Escambia, Santa Rosa area, not quite over here, but I'm going to tell you another win that is getting to that. We brought in the faith-based community and got them engaged. We opened up what we call a centralized receiving facility. And that's really, instead of you call 911, somebody is going to kill themselves and they take them immediately to a hospital and put them in a locked up room for 4 days or whatever. You are taken immediately to what we call a centralized receiving facility, and that's where you sit down with a couple of people and they find out what's really wrong. Maybe you had an emotional breakdown because your mom just died and nobody knows that because all they saw was you freaking out. So they want, and maybe you do need some time in. Maybe you forgot to take your medication. Whatever it is, providing that central area to receive these people will keep them out of the ERs, will keep them out of these beds, so we can put the people that need help where they belong. Now, we did that in Pensacola, Florida. We are now doing it, I believe, in Walton County in the next month to 6 months. We're putting another one over here, and we're probably going to do another one even beyond that in another year or so. It takes a while. You have to have a building, capital, all that stuff. But the point is, we're creating a network of support for the community. So whenever you recognize that you need help, you know where to go. And there's actually a place to go. How many of y'all have called trying to get your family members a doctor's appointment and you just can't get in? I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? So we're just trying to create that access to care. So those are the things that we did with the mental health task force. But I wanted you to see how my priorities lined up with that, and how I know a lot of your priorities are in the same line because we're the same people. So we can't fix Washington, but we can work on Florida. So the next thing, I'm just going to talk about a few things that I'm working on. Of course, if I can take questions anytime. I'm running a gaming bill. The bill will be creating stronger enforcement for illegal gaming. We have a lot of it. I know you probably don't even know it's illegal, but when you go to a restaurant or a gas station and they have a coin machine where you can put coins in and play games, that's illegal. That's against the law. Right now, it's only a misdemeanor, which, first offense, you know, you didn't know any better. That's one thing as a business owner. But what we have found, and I love that we have Ginger here, who's probably checking boxes like, yep, that's right. Or maybe not so much, but you're on track. I love that. I know she's following. We have found that a lot of these facilities that are repeat offenders because they're just not getting rid of these machines are not just illegally gambling. They're trafficking, they're selling drugs. There's a lot going on in the facility besides those illegal slot machines. There was a huge bust in Central Florida recently where they found tons of fentanyl. It was trafficking victims. It was a huge ring, and it took over a year to get anybody to do anything, because when you call the DA, when you're like, hey, I've got these people, they're doing illegal game. Oh, that's a misdemeanor. Like, to get SWAT to come in and do a raid on a misdemeanor, like, who's going to do that? So what the bill will do is create it to be a felony after the third offense. So if I come in and I tell you, shame on you, you shouldn't have that machine, you're like, oh gosh, I had no idea. Please don't, oh no, it's no big deal. You're fine. Do better. If I come back and I say, hey, what's up with this machine? Well, I just haven't had time. I'm going to get to it. I got to call the owner or whatever. And then the third time we come in and you're like, well, we're like, joke's on you. So we're just trying to put some guardrails in place so that we can empower the other branches of government to actually enforce the law in a way that's meaningful. Because illegal gambling in a little incidental, I didn't know the machine wasn't allowed, is a totally different conversation than a ring of illegal gambling machines and a ring of illegal behavior coming together. And if we can't come in off of a sign, like if you're speeding, now I have the right to stop you. But if you're not doing anything wrong, I can't stop you, right? It's the same thing. I can't bring in people and check on what's going on and find all of this illegal activity if I don't have the ability to do that. So increasing the penalties, increasing the level of crime will help us find the real predators, the real folks that need to be put behind bars. So we're excited about that. Another one. Now, are you ready for this? I want you to applaud if you support it. And it's funny because I get calls every day from other lawmakers, but not a single person has called me to complain. I am running the term limits bill on county commissioners. Are you with me? I mean, I support term limits at all levels of government, and I'm just like, and nobody's called me to complain, but I had a lawmaker call me this morning. Hey, Rep, are you sure about that term limit? Is it really going to be 8 years? Can you? And I'm like, who's calling you? Because they're not calling me. Well, they're kind of scared to call you. I'm like, that's cute. Do I look scary? I'm not scary. I am mean, though. I am mean. Okay, and then veterans' bills, and then I'm going to wrap it up. I do a lot for veterans. As a veteran, the Army saved my life. People say, thank you for serving, and I say, God bless it. They saved me. I had no purpose when I was 17. I was just struggling. My mama was struggling. My whole family was struggling. I joined the Army. I put a uniform on, and I learned how to do something that was meaningful. And that I will never forget what the military did for me. It gave me purpose, and it taught me how to take my purpose and turn it into something actionable, something meaningful. So when I got out of the military, I was like, man, I still want to help people. How do I do that? So I didn't get any help when I got out. In 1999, I went around. I tried everything. Nobody wanted to hire me. You don't have a degree. You don't have experience. I'm like 5 years in the military. Yeah, but I don't really know what that stuff is that you were doing, So I could not get a good paying job. I couldn't get any support. So the moment as I was growing through the community and becoming a leader, I started working on how I could help my fellow veterans. And as a lawmaker, there's a lot you can do. In the state of Florida, what we do, and I say we because I work hand in hand with Hammer, they flew me to Tampa last week to speak at a roundtable with the lieutenant governor. There's hundreds of lawmakers that are military, but they called me in House District 1, Michelle Salzman, all the way from Pensacola, to talk about what we're doing for veterans, because I don't just check boxes, and they know that. And they aren't checking boxes either, guys. Our Florida Department of Veterans Affairs shows up. They ain't messing around. So things like, and I loved how you had the summary up there, Mary, because I'm like, dang, she just said everything I was going to say. So that's great. But not quite. So we work for veterans. We do a lot of things for veterans. If you see a gap, if there's something that's not happening for you, and you can come to any of us lawmakers and tell us, none of us are going to turn you away. It is the most incredible thing. We will always fight for our veterans and our first responders, but a lot for our veterans. People come to us and say, well, I have this license to practice, but if I go to school here in Pensacola, I have to learn how to do this. If I go to Tampa, I have to go to school for 4 more years, but I did it in the military for 25. Okay, let's take care of that. Let's take care of that. Well, I have to get a business license over here, here, and here. Let's take care of that. I can't get dental care. Let's take care of that. If you see a gap in service, we want to fill the gap. The Florida Department of Veterans Affairs works hand in hand with the legislature, and we are always trying to find gaps. We don't just say, oh, look what we did, and stop. We keep going. We're like, okay, where's another gap we can fill? And that was one of the bills that I carried last year for veterans, was the long-term care. We weren't authorized by statute to provide long-term care for veterans. But if you are a veteran and you needed care, you can't get it. The VA doesn't have any room. Seats taken. So what did we do? We said, okay, we can create it. Statutorily, we can create the ability for the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs to treat you long-term. But here's the cool part. They're just a conduit. They're just a connector. So they can contract anybody they want. We didn't put any stipulations. And then when we provide that care at the state of Florida, we send the bill to the VA. The federal government is still going to pay for those veterans. We're not going to pay what they should pay. We're holding them accountable by providing the care that they say they can't do and then sending them the bill. So that's a really big win. That is a really big win. We also created Veterans Week, which that came from a Purple Heart, a president of the Auxiliary Purple Heart, blah, blah, blah. You know that big long name. Andrew came to me one day a few years ago. I was running for office and he said, hey, Michelle, I need Veterans Week. I was like, why do you need Veterans Week like that? I don't understand it. He said, but listen, everybody competes on Veterans Day, the day before, the day of. You got like everybody wants you to go to everything. You can't make it to everything. As the president, I can't go to all these things. But I love that they're trying to help. And we're not talking about the 10% off coupons, guys. We're talking about actual veterans events where you're caring for veterans or we're honoring them, we're respecting them, things like that. And I said, well, Andrew, what do you mean? He said, well, I come from another state and they had Veterans Week statewide. So we did things every day. You could go to a parade one day. The next day was the ceremony. The next day was the dental bus and the this and that so we can get veterans benefits to these veterans. And I said, well, Andrew, if that's what you want, then I'll go try to get it. So we got it at the county level. I was able to get the county commission to do a little resolution and say, we resolved that, you know, we have a Veterans Week. And then I went to the state and I said, hey, we need Veterans Week. So the first couple of years, because I didn't know what I was doing, but don't worry, I figured it out. I did resolutions. I said, we're going to resolve at the state level. So resolution, the whole state has Veterans Week. Well, with this bill, the veterans, the VA agency bill that was carrying all the other cool stuff, I said, can we just add Veterans Week in there? Well, absolutely, we support it. So we have Veterans Week at the Capitol now. We got Veterans Week all over Florida. Veterans Week in the Panhandle is going to be strong. So you now have a permission slip to celebrate a veteran, not just on one day, but any day in that week that you so choose, which means you can do a really cool event, or y'all can all go out to a memorial park and just be together and not worry about missing something else. So that's a really big win for me, because when other veterans come to me and say they need something, I try to deliver, and I'm really excited. It only took me a couple of years, and in the world of government, that's pretty good. So, that's all I have today. I hope that you learned a little bit about me and that you got pumped up for Florida, because we are the greatest state in the nation. I'm not just saying that. I travel all over the United States. They send me everywhere. I was in D.C. About a month ago, and they're trying to send me to Colorado. There's all kind. And when I go to these places, they say, man, Florida's got it right. I have to share you, because this is so ironic. I'm at a Medicaid conference. I'm healthcare. On my dead body, those bills will move, okay? I'm the chair, so I'm just telling you, those bills aren't moving. But I'm at a Medicaid conference, and there's only like 3 Republicans in the entire room. It's just tons of Democrats. And I don't know this because I don't know anybody. I'm texting my local leaders. I'm like, hey, speaker, da, 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 or, you know, the governor's staff or somebody. And they're like, oh, they're, you know, that's a Democrat. But when it came time for us to start talking and sharing and doing all that stuff, every single topic, they said, Florida is leading the way. Florida is leading the way. Hey, Representative Salzman, how did you do that? You know, and I'm like, well, we did this, you know, but it was neat to see. It wasn't a partisan conversation. It was Florida is leading the way. So you guys are living in a great place at a great time. And I am honored to be here today. So that's what I have.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a very special edition of the Driveway Liberty podcast, recorded live at the Walton Republican Women's Federated Club meeting in November 2023.